We've been living in a COVID world for over a year now, and the impact it has made on how we live our lives, on our attitudes, on our habits, even our fears, is quite extensive. So are there specific things that we can do in our homes and schools to help us get back to healthy living even more quickly as parents and as teachers? And how in particular are Christian and classically educated young people in a better position to not only survive, but thrive and flourish in a COVID and post-COVID world? It is good news. Join me for this conversation with Keith McCurdy, who is back for this episode of Basecamp Live.
Mountains, we all face them as we seek to influence the next generation. Get equipped to conquer the challenges, summit the peak, and shape exceptionally thoughtful, compassionate, and flourishing human beings. We call it Ancient Future Education for raising the next generation. Welcome to Basecamp Live. Now your host, Davies Owens.
Welcome to Basecamp Live, on the line with Keith McCurdy. How are you, Keith?
Oh, doing great. I hope you are.
I'm doing well, Keith. It's so good to have you back on. You are a regular on Basecamp Live. And if those who may be listening who don't know you, we need to know Keith has been over 30 years in the field of mental health. You've worked with more than, it says 15,000. I'm thinking it's more like, what, Keith, 20 or so?
Yeah, easily more than about 20,000.
I think so. We need to update that because you're doing a great work, and you've been the president and CEO of Total Life Counseling for all these years, and you've recently launched, I'm so excited about this, livesturdy.com. And if anybody knows you and hears your message, the importance of just sturdy kids, we need that more than ever these days. So tell us a little bit about what's happening on Live Sturdy if people want to learn more.
Yeah, I mean, Live Sturdy, I have launched that website really to kind of capture what I do outside of just the mental health realm, and really the message to parents of how do we build healthy foundations into the rearing of our children so that we raise sturdy individuals, so that we raise individuals that can, you know, live well in a broken world, even though the world is broken? How do they make good decisions and live well in the midst of that, rather than what we see today so much is kids that are more fragile and struggle so much more with anxiety and depression?
Yeah. There's a great quote on your site that I think says it well. One of your fans says, Keith's countercultural approach to parenting is a breath of fresh air. He teaches that self-confidence rather than self-esteem is the ultimate goal, and that healthy struggle is the engine to growth and maturity. And Keith's ideas are grounded in truth. He gives parents the tools needed to ensure their children grow into sturdy, mature adults. And I would add, even teachers benefit because we deal with kids all the time. That's a really great endorsement, Keith. And I think that's very well said. That being the case, since you are one who's out there listening to this world around us that continues to swirl into increasing chaos, it seems, it's certainly a good day to be in your business, perhaps. I'm always curious. I want us to talk a bit about, we're kind of coming up here on this 1 year mark of COVID. You and I got on the podcast, you know, way back trying to help folks make sense of it all. It's kind of an interesting moment. I feel like we're kind of hopefully coming out of it, at least slowly, maybe. And there's probably some things that we've both developed through that COVID time that are probably not good habits. And there's some other things that we need to embrace that we've discovered in. So I'm just, as always, give us a sense of kind of what are you hearing and seeing out there with the clients that are coming in? What's on their mind these days?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a great question because it's interesting as I look at folks, especially that I've been dealing with in the last 3 months. You know, once we've gotten into month 8, 9, 10, 11, you know, as we're getting closer to that year mark, I'm seeing a lot of similarity with a certain type of issue. And it's in many ways, it's almost a form of learned helplessness that's created a lot of unhealthy habits in the folks I'm dealing with. And I'll break it into like five categories. And I have conversations about these five categories every single day in my office. I've had days where almost every person I've talked with, we've had to address some of these categories. And what they illustrate is what we have gotten used to or comfortable in that really work against us being healthy. And so the five categories, I'll run through how I see them affecting folks. You know, the first is we're not respecting our physiology. And so, you know, I say that to a patient, I say, man, you know, they're coming in complaining about their stress level. And I say, well, are you respecting your physiology? And they say, well, what do you mean by that? I said, well, do you have a regular bedtime? Oh, no, I don't have a regular bedtime. Okay, well, do you get 8 to 9 hours of sleep? No, I never get 8 to 9 hours of sleep. And we walk through some of the basic physiological aspects of, are we respecting how God built us to function? You know, and are we doing the basic things just to keep the power plant healthy? That's a starting point with so many people right now. And it's amazing to me how out of balance that has become with folks.
And primarily because most of us are doing life at home in some increased way than pre-COVID. I assume that's the main reason.
Yeah. And that rolls into the second category that I talk about that often relates to. And a lot of these bump against each other. And that's, we've lost the ability to put boundaries around things. You know, the example I have all the time are folks that have never worked from home. And while some folks can work from home and do it successfully, the average person really struggles. And here's how they struggle. The workday used to end at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock, but now it doesn't end. You know, the workday goes on because they're not thinking I need to put a boundary around it. Next thing you know, I'm eating dinner while I'm sitting at my desk, or, you know, I'm coming back later to check emails at 9 o'clock at night because my office is now my living room. And what that does is it removes our ability to create space for respite, space for rest, space for enjoyment of relationships. I mean, it removes all that. It's, in a way, it's kind of the opposite of what we have a lot of times before the pandemic, when I was telling parents all the time, you have no space for rest or respite because you're running everywhere with your children involved in 48 different sports. Well, now you're in your own home, but because you're not putting any boundaries in, you still have no space for rest or respite.
Well, I wonder too, I saw recently, Barna did an updated on their Gen Z study looking at the impact of COVID on the lives of teenagers. And it's interesting because in that question of how do you compensate for your fear, your worry, and your anxiety, it's usually flee to a technology, watch a movie. So here's the same medium that we've been on all day for school or work is now the medium we use to go for restoration. So it seems like that's not a great idea either. Yeah.
I mean, and it's not. I mean, one of the other big arenas I talk to folks about, you know, we know this even before the pandemic, that increased use of technology, increased use of social media, and viewing the 24-hour news cycle, because all of those three things gorge on the negative. They gorge on the dysfunctional. That's what fills them. And when that fills us, it sure is hard for us to have a healthy perspective of life. You know, and that's a whole other category with both the physiology and the boundaries. It's then, how are you interacting with technology?
Right.
You know, the any idea of what's healthy for technological interface as an example for a child is already out the window when they're online for school.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, we're already past the point. I had a conversation with a parent today who their school made a transition and their second grader has to be on Zoom for 4 hours a day.
That's unbelievable.
And I asked the parent, I said, so when did that start? And he said, it started this week. I said, how's it going? He said, my son has tried to break the laptop because he's identified it as the bad thing. I mean, but that's another category right now. We're turning to what temporarily numbs us or distracts us, but it actually is unhealthy.
Right.
Much like drug addiction.
Well, yeah. And it's just, again, it's like the very thing we're seeking refuge in is the very thing that's continuing to, it's a downward spiral. And we're going to, you know, as we're talking through this, we're going to kind of come to the big question of, as Christian classical folks who have our kids in these schools, we're in a different place in which in many cases we are hopefully in session, we're not as dependent on the screen, but there's a whole nother range of solutions I think that our students experience that I think gives them some endurance to get through this. But continue on this with so help us understand. So you're basically just, you know, you've lost your habits, you've lost your boundaries, you're sitting at home more. I mean, is that?
Yeah, you're not taking care of yourself nearly as well. That's the physiological part.
Is that because people are going to work wearing their, you know, boxers and stuff, and they only wear, wear the shirt at the top for the Zoom call? Is that
right? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the running jokes, make sure you don't have to stand up because you might not have to put pants on.
Yeah, right. But that has an effect on us. I mean, you think that would make you relaxed, but it doesn't. It actually.
So I had a young woman that I saw this afternoon, and I saw her for the first time last week, and we had a conversation, And I left her with homework, and her homework was get up every morning, take a shower, get yourself ready for the day, just like you're going into work, get dressed for it before you start your work day. She reported to me when she got on the call today, teletherapy call, very first thing she said, I am shocked at what a difference, and I call it engaging the day, what a difference engaging the day has made in 1 week in her life.
Yep.
Because she had gotten into a mode of minimal functioning. She said, not only did it affect my mood, my attitude, how I interacted with people in my family, but it also affected my work.
Mm.
And that was her, and that was in the most basic way, that was her taking care of her physiology and engaging the day differently.
I was just gonna say, I've heard you talk about the difference in kind of being a participant versus a consumer. And it seems like we're really in a consumeristic mindset all day long.
And in this stance, it's that notion of, yeah, am I going to really be an active participant operating on the world? Or do I take that consumer role that ends up being victim role where the world's working on me?
Right.
And when we engage the day, get up, get ready, as if we're going out, going to work, going to whatever, changes our whole attitude as we engage it. You know, and then the other two things that stick out to me that I have conversation with folks about all the time is this. You know, we have become, I had one kid tell me, I've become a cave creature. And I said, really big eyes and big thumbs from technology? And he said, no. He said, my home has become my cave. He said, we never leave. And that's one of the things too. You know, there's so many messages out there that in many ways have kept us operating in fear. And we have to realize when we're fear motivated, fear paralyzes. And one way of experiencing paralysis is we stay in our home. And so I challenge folks, it's amazing to me the number of folks that do not leave their home except for groceries or if they have to. Very few people these days are leaving their home because they want to. They're purposely going out and engaging. You know, one of the recommendations I've been giving folks for months, I said, you know, within where I live, the Roanoke Valley, within 1 hour, there's probably 8 or 10 fabulous farmers markets. And people look at me funny and I say, hey, they're outside, wear a mask. There's always cool stuff at the farmer's market. Every Saturday, take your wife, take your kids, get out of your house. And it's amazing how hard that is for people right now. Yet when they begin doing it, they start breaking out of the mold of being that consumer, victim, whatever, and they're more of a participant in life again.
I was just saying, I saw some article recently, I think it was in Atlantic, but it was a woman basically just bemoaning the loss of something as simple as being at a sports event in, you know, packed with other humans. Just that simple sort of humanity has been lost. And what does that do to us is what you're talking about. Yeah.
I mean, if we accept at the most basic level, we're built to be in relationship and in community. And that has been greatly affected this last year, the notion of participating in a larger community, participating in relationship. And so getting out and engaging does that. And then the other category, the fifth one, is really that notion of our focus. Because what I have seen during this is our focus has become consumed with what frustrates us, annoys us, bothers us. As a woman said the other day, how my husband is breathing is driving me crazy. That's okay.
Everyone's on edge, it sounds like. Yes.
Right. And so we've got it. We've really got to be mindful of what Philippians tells us in 4:8, 9, and 10. You know, whatever's right, wise, pure, lovely, anything admirable, praiseworthy, think on these things. But it's hard to do that right now unless we are intentional. And so when I look at folks that come in my office now, and it's amazing to me the number of folks that will come in, and their general complaint is, I'm tired of my marriage. I really think we've got to change something drastically, a separation or something. Or, you know, my kids are driving me crazy and I'm thinking about doing drastic things to get the point, or, you know, whatever it may be. Or my job is driving me crazy. I'm quitting my job. Not the greatest economy to quit a job in. And what I say to these folks across the board is, before you do anything like that, realize you need to have clarity, and clarity comes from stability. And these 4 or 5 key areas are what create stability right now. So let's first assess where you are with those and get you moving along better. Now, what I've seen with that is once they start establishing that stability, their quote issue that was at a 10, most of the time is now 5. You know, it really wasn't, that was the issue that brought them in, but it really isn't nearly the issue they were believing it was, because they were out of balance. They were not operating healthy.
And Keith, those are excellent, excellent words of wisdom that I think all of us in some form or fashion probably needing to hear right now. I want to take a break. When we come back, there's the resolution to a lot of this kind of coming out of the COVID funk, if you will, is definitely some just self-care and living wisely and in balance. But I think it is interesting that those of us who have students in our Christian classical schools are having an added advantage, I think, in terms of not only just being in session, but the way that they're being taught is actually equipping them to endure the present moment and to thrive once this whole thing is over. So why don't we take a break? I'm very curious your thoughts on this. We'll be right back with Keith McCurdy. Welcome back, Keith. It's so good to figure out the answer to this big question around how we move through these COVID days and into hopefully the world that we have maybe forgotten a little bit, where we can go to sports games and we can engage with one another. And there's some habits maybe that aren't always so awesome that we've picked up along the way being in this new cramped COVID world. Before we jump to this question that I'd love to get your input on about the impact of our schools directly on how it's preparing our students, are there some things that we as parents should be cautious of in terms of maybe inadvertently feeding into some bad habits or tendencies that might actually be working against the very thing we want for our students and our children?
Yeah, I think that is a fabulous question. It's amazing that so much of what I go around and consult on and speak about, you know, raising sturdy kids, and there is a heightened danger right now of parents falling into a certain pattern that works directly against that. And what that is this: you know, we know our children are struggling with so many losses right now and so many changes right now, and we know that has taken a toll on them. That increases our desire to keep them comfortable, to keep them happy. Now, I don't have a problem with a child being happy and being comfortable. That's a great thing. But when we set that up as our parenting goal, and we can slide into that very, you know, subconsciously during times of struggle, you know, it's just easier to say, gosh, you know, with what they've been through, let them play two more hours on Xbox, you know, let them have extra candy when they want it, you know, or whatever it may be. But the idea is we've got to be careful about that, because when we set as a goal comfort for our children, we're feeding into entitlement. You know, entitlement really is fueled by two key things. One is possessions, getting things, and the other is being kept in a positive emotional state, because we begin to expect that to continue regardless. And the difficulty with that is entitlement is one side of a coin. The other side of that coin is victimhood. And let me define the two terms in a simple way. And we'll start with entitlement. Entitlement is I deserve this, or I deserve to always feel good because I breathe. Because I exist. The moment that is blocked, we go into victimhood, and the flavor of victimhood is we start blaming other people for why I'm not comfortable and don't have what I want. And what that shows us is it really shows us the stark difference between what's our outcome goal with our kids. Is it kids who seek comfort or kids who seek living well? And that's a huge difference. You can't pursue both at once. And in my experience, those who always seek comfort end up raising beautiful victims.
What a fascinating, this is worthy of a whole nother podcast, Keith. We can't go too far with it, but I think your point is brilliant. And it's not only a caution against our own parenting desire just to, and maybe indulge them a bit because we feel sorry for the challenges they're facing, but it's also the very message of the broader culture itself, which is one of buy and consume and always pursue the next thing to somehow make yourself feel better. It's basically the shopaholic type mindset that is so pervasive in the culture, not to mention just the, you know, non-biblical view of finding your identity in your possessions or your things and consuming.
Well, and I'll tell you too, now that you mentioned culture, in a larger culture, we see victimhood played out. When we stay in that role of chosen victimhood, you know, we're not true victims in that. It's a developed victimhood. eventually that leads to hostility towards those we blame. I mean, that's where it leads to. And we're seeing that played out.
We're seeing that in volumes. I mean, this is such a fascinating, again, this is where I think this is an interesting, we should make this a whole podcast, because that is really reverse engineering what's happening all around our country today. Is just
right.
Everyone is, if anything goes slightly against what they want, it becomes, we'll just go burn it down, protest it, scream about it, claim to be victims. And you're saying it's really just downstream of maybe some bad parenting or bad directing of young people, yeah, in terms of their...
Yeah, I was interviewed years ago by a local news group, and they were talking about, for some reason, they were talking to me about parenting, and they brought up government.
Yeah.
And I kind of laughed, and I said, well, I'll give you an opinion on that. And they said, what's that? I said, well, if you want to affect your government, if you want to have the best effect on a government, then raise your children to be sturdy, because sturdy children do not seek comfort. They seek what's right. They seek what's healthy. They're not looking to benefit themselves. They're looking at what is beneficial for others, selflessness. You know, and so it is downs, it is looking backwards, looking at the spring of these ideas. And when we develop that in our children, then they seek that when they're older, and that's what they want their government to do.
Yeah, when that's exactly right. And I think, so let's stay on this kind of, because I think we're on the same, it's the right direction. And that part of what we're trying to figure out is, how is it the environment in which our children, being Christ-centered homes, church-going homes, involved parent homes, but also in a very complicated COVID world with technology, you know, leeching in every day, how do we navigate around that? And then in particular, how are our schools, as Christian classical schools, setting our students up to be even better positioned to not fall into these temptations, yeah, of depression and uncertain futures and victimhood and so on? How do you see that played out?
Well, I'll give you two different ways to look at that. The first is just students and individually. Excuse me. When I look at the last year, it's amazing to me that a majority of patients that were already patients of mine have gone through COVID much better than patients who came to me in COVID. In other words, folks that were already on the path of raising sturdy kids, learning to handle struggle well, learning that how they feel is not the determiner of who they are, those folks were already primed well to deal with something else hard in life and weather it better than those who were overwhelmed by it and then have come to see me without that perspective. So students that I've already seen in families that are operating along the lines of equipping children for life rather than keeping them happy are already faring better in general. So that's the one way to look at it. Now, specifically with schools, this is a great question. I get this all the time. I deal with every make and manner of school that's out there right now. And I'll break them into three categories, and I'll tell you what I see differently. The first is the typical public school that right now is either not in session or minimally in session. A lot of tech, a lot of online, a lot of screen time. The second is private school that's in session. And the third is a Christian classical school that's in session. Most private schools, most Christian classical schools are in session right now. So public school kids, you know, when I look at them right now, what I see is the environment has turned them into bystanders rather than participants. Because I had a young girl tell me today, she came in, she said, I just feel trapped. She said, everything that I've known that's part of living life is now gone. She says, I feel trapped and I don't even know what to do with myself. So I'm just ruminating on my misery. I mean, what a horrible way to look at things. But she had enough insight to realize where she was. And so with students not being in school, the biggest difference from public to private has really shut down a vital part of what allows them to realize they're part of a larger community and to be able to grow in that community.
Well, and again, I mean, within the public, and again, I'm making a broad generalization, but there is, yeah, because there is, well, there is actually a very strong theology within the public school of, you know, it's all about you. You can be anything you want to be, but at the same time, you're a victim. And there's a sense of, as you've called it, learned helplessness that's sort of, yeah, embedded in that psyche. And so it seems like every day it's just a matter of what am I not supposed to do and what am I limited to and what I can. And I think that restriction,
right,
would obviously affect not only one's faith, but just one's general temperament, it seems like.
So, yeah, well, yeah, their general attitude and perspective about life as it is. That's right.
Yeah.
And so I see the students that are struggling the most, number one, they're middle school students. They struggle by far the most right now with all this. High school students typically have some more freedom. They can drive, they can get out. Grammar school students are fine playing Legos or doing board games or getting together in the neighborhood. Middle schoolers are young adults on the brink that are hamstrung right now. And they are experiencing the highest level of emotional difficulty right now. So in the public system, I see that just ramped up beyond belief. So if you shift to the private system, the difference between the public and the private typically is environment, meaning they're going to school. They're participating in life. And I would say there is a difference between those that are not participating, going to school, and those who are showing up, participating in something that is part of that normal experience, normal life. The third category that we get to is the Christian classical school. Now, the Christian classical school also provides the better environment, but there's something very different that I also see. And it's something I see with kids that graduate from Christian classical schools, what I've seen in my own kids, what I see in hundreds or thousands of other kids and stories I've picked up along the way. And what I tell folks is look at towards the finished product, the juniors, the seniors, and the recent graduates. And so not only are you seeing that they're still participating in life, but you see a perspective of life. It's very different from the other two environments. And that perspective, you know, I'll give you a way to think about it, is I am not determined by what happens around me in life. And what happens around me is really not that important, is not as important as how I choose to respond to it. So they're not operating in victim mentality, because a victim mentality is everything is about what happens around me and to me.
No, and because they have at a base level an understanding they can deal honestly with brokenness. I mean, just the theology of like, that is the world and it's okay to identify it as such and then figure out a way to move through that. Is that
right?
What you're
saying? They have a foundation of truth. And even if we simplify it down to this, the world is broken. I'm not going to be surprised that it's not always going to work the way I want it to. I'm not always going to get what I want. I'm not always going to be happy about certain things. But yet, even though the world is broken, God has still made a place and a path in this for me to learn to live well in the midst of that brokenness. That's part of what Christ overcomes. And so when students have that rooted in, not to mention the classical form of education echoes that all the way through.
So talk a bit about that, because I didn't mention this, if folks are hearing you for the first time, you have served at Faith Christian there in Roanoke as the board chair. I mean, you understand this form of education from a kind of insider's view. And so, you know, one could be listening to us right now and say, well, yeah, but you can get a Christian perspective from your church to understand how to deal with sin and brokenness. And that's true to that extent.
Right.
But what do you see as this form of education of, you know, reading through the great books and having these discussions and wrestling through ideas, the greatest ideas that have shaped humanity? How does that give this sort of inoculation and preparation for moving out into this world as you see it?
Yeah, I call it building life calluses. When we let our students engage humanity, and we do it through the great books, we do it through wrestling through ideas, we do it through learning to debate and engage and discuss, we expose our children to the world yet rooted in truth in the form of the classical education. You know, my son, as an example, you know, I asked him recently, he's a sophomore in college, and we were talking about his education, and he said, yeah, he said, I don't use a lot of the quote information from my
right.
classical education. He said, but how I've learned to engage education, how I've learned to engage ideas, how I've learned, he said, that has been ingrained in me, you know,
yeah.
seeking truth, able to discuss, able to evaluate, able to, you know, my son is not afraid to wrestle with things. He's not afraid to disagree or have people disagree with him. As he says, it's a challenge. It's a good thing. And so,
yeah, I mean, and that's it's at face value should be something that we all do. It's just a simple, to be human is to be able to engage an idea and to question and to take things apart and put them back together.
Right.
But that's just not even allowed in so many school environments today. Even, and that's assuming you can be in the school, much less you're trying to do it in some awkward way online, but the, the ultimate vision of just being able to say, look, the world is broken, but there is a way to work our way through that. God is on the throne. And here, through these books, it's great to hear what your son experienced on that. And that's a good thing to remember. Yeah.
Well, and I kind of, I liken it to, we have a hunt camp in the mountains.
Yeah.
And it seems like every time we go up there, something is broken. And the last time we went up there in the middle of the night, a few weeks back, 18 degrees outside, and we run out of water in the cabin.
That would be a problem.
And so, it's a problem. And so basically here I am with my son and one of my good buddies, his son, college kids. And the prospect is, well, we run out of water. We need to figure something out. And the interesting thing is they were all about it. They're like, let's figure it out. Where does the water come from? Let's go digging around. Let's go, and we finally figured it out. It was a clog and a spring pipe that drained out the cistern. But the reality is their first thought is we can figure this out because we're used to problems being thrown at us and we're allowed to wrestle with it.
And it was more than just pull out Uber Eats and order some water bottles and have it delivered. There's a perspective to your point. There's a perspective that says we can figure out this in a wholly different type of way, which is so needed in our culture today. Well,
yeah,
excellent. Well, we are about at time, Keith. This has been encouraging and enriching. And I think just steady on right now. We are, we serve a living God. We've got our schools right now. It's fascinating. Just Christian classical schools are seeing enrollment applications at an unprecedented level. I think so many people, for the reasons we've just gotten through talking about, have said, I think we need something different here in our family. And it's more than just, aren't we unique reading these great books? We are literally forming what our students love, giving them tenacity, sturdiness, as you like to call it, to endure, which is ever needed in this crazy world. So, well, Keith, very good. Well, remind everybody again, if they want to know more about you and opportunities to connect, you speak at schools all around the country. You're a big part of our movement.
Yeah, I would tell folks, please come check out the new website we launched called livesturdy.com. Actually, I'll give a shout out. I'm going to be out in a couple of weeks in Bozeman, Montana, to school. I travel around still and consult with schools. I've also been doing a lot of online webinars for schools, on different topics and then doing Q&A with their families and their parents. So I've really adapted so that whatever fits a school right now, we're able to pull off. I never thought I'd be setting up a studio in my office, but I have, which is amazing.
We all have studios in our office now, Keith.
Yeah, we do.
It's a good thing. Well, I love that you can extend your reach and you always have such good wisdom to offer us. So thanks again for being a part of this episode of Basecamp. We'll definitely have you back on. And we've got our McCurdy moments, which we're now doing throughout the regular Basecamps. We have a moment we're going to take and get some more wisdom from Keith. So look forward to having you back on. Thanks so much as always.
Thank you.
That's a wrap on another episode of Basecamp Live. Guys, we know it's not easy raising the next generation. This idea of ancient future education is valuable and important. We are so excited about it, and we would love to hear from you and support you in what you are doing. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Basecamp Live. Also, send us an email at info@basecamplive.com. So until next time, let's keep climbing the mountain before us together.